Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Are you planning on throwing out some of the old as you ring in the new year? If you're like a lot of people, you may be contemplating throwing out your spouse. The beginning of the new year brings about lots of ideas about how your life can be better in the coming year, and January is also when lots of people, maybe even you, start looking into or actually filing for divorce. The numbers in the first month of the year are an increase of, listen to this please, more than 300% than the preceding 4 months. So once January hits, we have a huge number of people who go, okay, we're going to throw in the marriage towel. And I get it. Many people are really unhappy in their marriages, and they can't see spending another year in that level of pain. I get it. I truly do. I understand wanting the pain to stop. But are you sure you're not just jumping from the fire into the frying pan? So to help unpack why January is one of the peak months for family lawyers and marriage professionals, by the way, I'm joined by Greg Griffin. He's a certified pastoral counselor, and he's also a fellow Dodger fan. So even though neither one of us live in L.A. anymore. So, Greg, thank you so much for being on the show and to talk about this really important topic.
Leslie, thanks so much for the opportunity. It's something I can tell that you're passionate about as well as I am in terms of how we can help families and individuals who are really, really hurting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I've known about this for years. There seem to be really two times when my phone rings off the hook. January is one, and June is the other, when, you know, schools get out of session. But January seems to be like the really big one. And so is it just the new year and wanting a clean slate, or is there something else going on that's exploding the interest in divorce in January?
You know, that's a great question. I think as humans, we love the idea of a rhythm, and certainly the calendar fits that for us, whether it's school or whether it's the new year after the holidays. And so we take different points and times to reflect and take stock of my life. And so we tend to think that when we hear about that astounding stat that divorce filings go up 300%, well, it makes sense it would go up over the previous months because nobody wants to be doing that during the holidays. And
right.
We think, well, I guess people just figured they're done. And what we've learned, Leslie, and I'm sure you're aware too, is that people have been plotting for months, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, the pain they've been in that nobody knew because it's a secret they're holding, and they're figuring out things like, what am I going to leave behind for my spouse? What am I going to take? Where am I going to live? And so it comes off as a complete shock to many people, and oftentimes, even many times, the spouse is surprised. They know things weren't that great, but they didn't know it was that way. And everyone around them is like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know. And so I think that it's almost a smokescreen that we think, well, January is the new year, and they just decided to want a new relationship. No, this is something where the pain has been smoldering for a long time. Maybe they've tried, and they haven't been heard, and they've tried everything, and they're frustrated, and they just are flustered. They're just feeling hopeless, and so they say the only option I've got is divorce. And I think that as we continue to talk, hopefully folks that are listening will hear that maybe that's not their only option, or at least their best option to consider right now.
Well, you know, and I agree with that, because you and I'm sure you're familiar with this other statistic, which every time I hear it, you know, it blows me away, about that people are unhappy in their relationships for, on the average, 6 to 7 years before they do anything. And I'm thinking, would you walk around with a broken leg for 6 years? I mean, you know,
yeah.
This idea that somehow just, you know, I don't know if people bury their head or they make some effort. I'm not going to slam people and say they don't make any effort to try to fix it. Most of the time it's going to their partner and, you know, laying out the complaints or laying out the, you know, the whole long list of everything that their partner's doing wrong, which generally doesn't work. But to actually, I mean, you talk about the secrecy around this, and that's what's so stunning, that when people's relationships are struggling, they don't talk with their friends in a healthy way or their family in a healthy way. They complain about it, right?
Correct, yes. And so,
you know,
people
and
are
so
looking
kind,
to say,
it's
what
kind
do
of
I
like,
do
well,
to help you?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked with you before I got licensed. All my friends would go, I can't wait till you get licensed. I said, no, I can be your friend or I can be your therapist. I can't be both. Because, you know, as your friend, you want me to take your side and say, you know, you're right. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is they're only getting one side of the story.
Mm-hmm. For sure. You know. And I think the friends, like you said, it's a big difference. We want our friends to if you will, feel our pain and to be with us. And when I'm doing premarital counseling with folks, I ask each of them, I say, how do you like the other's friends? And I said, I hope you'll find somebody that when they are upset with you, will go out and have a drink or have dinner and come back not more fired up and angry, but more calm and relaxed to say, look, I hear you. It's difficult. I mean, marriage is not for the faint of heart. It's just, it has such great rewards, and I think that's true of many, many opportunities in life. It's not easy, and boy, when we do it, it feels so great when we feel like we've hung in there and we reap the benefit. And so we need friends around us that go, I hear you, sister, you know what, girl, you go back home and you hang in there, rather than, you know what, I'll tell you what to do. And then, you know, we come home and we've got a bigger problem, and it's
right,
all because of the voices that we allow into our lives.
Yeah, and it's trying to figure out how to get those counterbalancing forces. And you know, right now, I mean, when my parents got divorced in, let's see, when was it, 1975, I think, if I'm 75 or 76, if I can remember correctly. I mean, even then, divorce was starting to be acceptable. There was still a little bit of a stigma about it, but more people were getting divorced. And now it just seems like easy answer. And, you know, when I tell people, when I talk to people, it's like, if you have children, you can't get divorced. You're still going to be having to deal with this person. You know, and now you're adding a bunch of complications. And right now, you know, I'm going to date the show, but right now we've got, you know, the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie split with the kids smack dab in the middle. And, you know, it's a common thing where people say, oh, the kids will be okay. But, you know, because the kids want you to be happy, don't they? I mean, you know, isn't it important for mom and dad individually to be happy? Or is that a fallacy that we're selling that the kids will be okay?
You know, I think that's really great to focus on, because that's what I think people, in the midst of their deep pain, I've got a mediator colleague that I've run across, and he said, we're in the same business. We're in the pain relief business. I said, I beg to disagree. I'm hopefully in the healing business, you know, that, yeah, we got to stop the pain, but I'm not just trying to mask it or hide it. And particularly when it comes to children, you know, we think that the kids will be okay, and it doesn't destine a child to fail. It's just a mark that's going to be with them. And, you know, as like you, Leslie, with people coming to my office, oftentimes a lot of the broken story comes from mom and dad didn't stay together, and I'm not shaming or blaming anybody. It's just that the impact on the kids. So, you know, for instance, we think January would be a good time after the holidays. Well,
right,
it's not any better. Oftentimes the kids are madder because they go, oh, the last few months have just been a sham. Or the kids, you know, we wait until the kids graduate and then we get divorced. Well, great. So now I feel even more betrayed. And so we think that, you know, the kids will be okay and the kids will be fine. I think, you know, the kids won't be okay with it over time if we can get them some help and they can learn and grow and learn forgiveness, which is a essential life skill in my book.
Absolutely.
Then perhaps they can grow through it. But my goodness, as you said, you know, if you are a parent, unless one parent dies or moves to the other side of the planet, we got to figure this thing out together. And if it's hard under the same roof, imagine how it's going to be under two roofs. And so the difficulty The word I use is ripples. Uh-oh, I got surprised because here's this new camp that the kids want to go through. Who's going to pay for it? Well, now we're financial adversaries. Oh, my gosh, I never expected that this was going to be a problem. Or now we've got this. Or I think that you're hiding money and what's going on over there and how come you do things this way at your house and I thought we were in agreement. And so that's when the kids just go, oh, my gosh, my mom and my dad, I love them, but. And so it's just such a heartbreaking story. I've not met anybody that, you know, came from a broken home, and I'd said, well, how old were you? And they don't miss a beat. They can tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I was seven. I was
yeah,
four.
Yeah, we
don't
know exactly. Yeah.
Know exactly and, when it happened.
Well, and, you know, the idea, and I get the, you know, the idea is like, oh, we're going to have one, you know, last great holiday together. We're going to just have this wonderful experience. I mean, in fact, God, somebody was actually telling me that the wife was planning on leaving and they all went to Europe together. You know, for like, I mean, the kids had no idea that this was coming, but, you know, so they had this wonderful vacation in Europe. And it's like, boy, doesn't that taint it? I mean, you know, if it's, okay, so now kids will remember, well, this was our last Christmas as a family. And by the way, that's not a happy memory.
I think you're right. It, you know, the idea is the heart's in the right place as parents. Is look, because we love our kids, as I, you know, say to folks, nobody loves your children more than you and your spouse. It's just nobody, I mean, you and the,
absolutely,
you know, the one that brought them into life. So you can have boyfriends, step-parents, whatever you got, but nobody's going to love them. And so, you know, if anything, I think it erodes the trust to an even deeper level when something like that, done for the right reason, you know, my heart's in the right place, but it comes off horribly wrong because, if anything, it undermines the trust to an even greater level.
Well, and it's interesting that you phrase it that way because many years ago, I had a woman in her early 30s who came to me because she was struggling because her parents had, you know, basically done what you were talking about before, waiting until everybody was out of the house and then dropping the bombshell. And so she questioned whether any of her childhood was real.
Exactly.
And
Leslie, I think it's the same thing when somebody experiences betrayal in marriage. You know, they find out a couple of betrayals, and then they fill in the gaps with all this negative information. I bet that was a betrayal. I bet that was a betrayal. And it may not have been. Although the feelings are very, very real for that individual, whether it's the child of divorce or whether it's the person who's been cheated on. And so then you almost begin to doubt your own ability to keep your sanity because you're thinking what was actually real and what was fake.
And, right, and that has repercussions for when they grow up and want to have a serious relationship. I mean, I know I had to work through a whole bunch of stuff. And you know, there were parts of me that sometimes I'm still trying to figure out, you know, is my husband going to leave? Now, we've been married for 30 years, so probably not. But there's still that niggling little thing. And, in fact, that's my greatest fear is him walking down the stairs and saying, I'm leaving. and that's coming from my childhood wound. And the challenge for children is, you know, how do I love my mom? How do I love my dad? You know, and parents don't realize all of the internal things that go on with kids, you know, what they don't tell one parent because, you know, it might hurt their feelings to let them know that I had a really good time over at dad's house or, you know, I have, and then it becomes this whole secret keeping thing, which I don't think parents understand.
I think they might if they have been through it themselves as a kid. Because we know that divorce, it's strange. You would think children who come through divorce would say, no way that's happening. I'm letting that happen. And the research points the other way.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's one of those things, again, we can tell ourselves whatever we want to tell ourselves. As I tell people often, the subconscious can't tell the difference between a lie and a truth. So we have to be very careful with what we tell ourselves. The kids will be okay. I'll be fine. You know, we'll work out the finances. We'll be friends. You know, to me, that's the line that just makes me want to just pull my hair out. I'm like, you think you're going to be friendly and amicable? I've not met two marriages alike. I've not met two divorces alike. But in my mind, I like that somebody said to me one time, that old Dirty Harry line, do you feel lucky? Because it's probably not happening that way.
Well, I mean, that's the fallacy. I mean, people talk about the good divorce, and interestingly enough, coming out of my job, you know, people coming through my office, I've never seen anybody who's been able to divorce well. And in my personal life, there was, you know, the parents of, you know, one of the kids my son played soccer with and kind of grew up in sports with, that, but I only saw it from the outside. I never, you know, but, and again, that's all we ever really see of anybody's relationship is the external view of it, which I think what you were saying earlier, when people come in and they're just so shocked that, you know, they're blown away, whether it's by their partner or their friends breaking up, that suddenly it's like, well, I didn't see this coming, because we hide it.
Sure, sure. And I think it's one of those things, is what do I do? And if I tell somebody, what will they think of me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots and lots of questions and sleepless nights and, you know, what do I do? I've tried to get this spouse of mine to hear my concerns. And, you know, the great thing, which we'll get to, I hope, I'm sure, later in the call, is that there's some great solutions ahead. If we're willing to give them a shot, they might work for us. And
absolutely.
But when we're in the middle of it, we think, oh, my gosh, this is never going to get better. It's only going to be worse. I've tried and tried, as you said, for years, and I just can't see, you know, and as one therapist friend of mine says, the switch is off, meaning I am
mm-hmm.
done. And so that's so hard to hear, because I know that it's for the person who wants to try to make it work who hears that, but also for the person who announces to the world, I am done. It's just a wounded heart, and that's going to play out with its own set of ripples for whatever is ahead in future attempts at relationships. So it's just heartbreaking. I think that for me, I share with people, look, I just you know, have such a heart for family and for children, and we can't save every, and perhaps some are abusive, as I wrote a blog recently that just said right up front, if you're in a dangerous or abusive relationship, this does not apply. Please get
Absolutely.
Some help now. Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, in so many, many cases, what we in the industry call a low-conflict marriage. We just can't seem to get on the same page.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not anything horrific happening under our roof. We just feel empty. We feel, you know, unmotivated, hopeless. And that's where
I
try to come in and say to folks, I think there's some hope if you'll give us a chance to explore and ask some questions and see what might change.
Absolutely. So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with pastoral counselor Greg Griffin about the uptick in the interest in divorce at the beginning of the year and what you should be thinking about if that's the way you're headed. I understand. If you've listened to this show, you know I don't believe that miserable and marriage should be used in the same sentence. And I also believe your marriage is already in trouble if the way you describe your marriage is, it's not so bad, which means it's not good. And if you want it to be better, if you want to keep your family together, then I encourage you to, before you contact an attorney, contact me. Send me an email or give me a phone call and take advantage of my free no obligation strategy session that will help you get your marriage back on track to it being good, not just not so bad. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, .com. Or you can call me at area code 919-924-0463, and if you really want to give your kids a fantastic holiday present, fixing your marriage is the way to go. So now I'm going to get back and continue my conversation with Greg Griffin. And you know, one of the things you wrote an article, I apologize, I can't remember the title of it off the top of my head, but you were talking about that things don't always go the way people, that divorce doesn't go the way people think it's going to. So what are some of the things that people misunderstand or underestimate when they're thinking about getting a divorce?
That's a great question for people to consider, because as you and I were talking before we began the show, it occurred to me, I'm a visual learner, and it occurred to me the other day that a way that might explain it to somebody is that if the picture looks scary, it might be because your nose is a little too close to the picture. So can we, if we will, back away a little bit and take a broader view. And I think that when the pain is so great for folks, they, you know, our bodies respond and react in certain ways that we get tense and we get anxious, and so we're not quite as able to think as clearly as we'd like. And so when I do get a chance to talk to couples that are, you know, usually 4 out of 5 times, one person wants to make it work. So those are the people we meet. We don't meet, Leslie and I don't meet the people who, both of them are saying, who wants to be the plaintiff, who wants to be the defendant.
Right.
And so when I speak to the person who's leaning out, I try to help them, first of all, calm down. Say, look, you can always go get a divorce. I'm not here to try to run your life or blame or shame you. You've got reasons why you're hurting. So let's see if we can slow down and think ahead a little bit. Henry Cloud wrote a book that I love called 9 Things You Simply Must Do. And one of the things he talked about is play the movie. And I love that image. Can we play the movie out? What would your life look like if this didn't work? So now you're 43 with 2 kids and you're divorced, if that's what you do. How's that going to go? You're not, you know, 27, hot and sexy, ready to go out and hit the town, you know. So it's a little different. So can we help you begin to think ahead a little bit? Because you're thinking, you know what, we're going to get through this. We'll, you know, the kids, we'll help them through it. We'll partner on that. My spouse is going to understand because they're not happy either. And so we kind of convince ourselves that this is going to be a lot easier than it really is. And, Leslie, as you said a little
earlier.
Right,
that they're going to have the good divorce.
They're going to have the good divorce. And I haven't met anybody who has a good divorce. I haven't heard anybody ever say, you know what, I got a great deal. I just haven't heard it. When I mean that, I mean everything from the finances to, as we've been spending a lot of time here, because most marriages do involve, or divorces do involve children. You know, the kids are fine, my finances are fine, and my future is fine. It usually doesn't work that way. And so, you know, it's going to cost more than you think. It's going to, and that's just the financial realm. I had an attorney here in the Atlanta area. I was working on some legislation here in Georgia for a few years, and she said she has a formula. If you can live on 40% of what you currently have, meaning you're going to get half, and then you're going to give an attorney 10% of that, and then you get to keep 40%. So if you can live on 40%, then you can afford to get a divorce. I don't know many people that want to lower their standing of living to that. And so it's really such an overwhelming thing. This is a huge decision. I know people don't take it lightly when they announce to their spouse, you know, I phoned an attorney, or here are your papers, or I'm going to get a divorce. So, you know, it's just heartbreaking what it takes for people to get there. And yet there's so much more ahead that we can't possibly understand in the middle of it. And then I think it becomes, as you and I were talking earlier, Leslie, it just becomes so easy to tell ourselves, that's not going to be me. It's, to me, it's the 16-year-old's mindset that, yes, you're telling me about drinking and driving and drugs and pregnancy, but that's not going to happen to me. And so
right,
I'm going to
miss that bullet because somehow I'm different. Which I mean, and in some cases that's true. But I love that that 40%. You're living on 40% of what you have, because that somehow seems to come as a real shock to people. You know, and I'm looking at them like, well, what did you think? And it's really interesting because both my children, I tell people I don't have children anymore. I have adults because they're now out of their teenage years. And, you know, this is the first year that my daughter is not going to be home on Christmas morning. And that really hurts me. It's like, I'm going to miss her smiling. I mean, she's coming home Christmas afternoon, but it's like she's not going to be here first thing in the morning. I don't get to cook our special Christmas breakfast. And so that for me is really hard. And I think people don't get, you know, are you prepared not to see your kids on Christmas morning, on their birthdays?
Yes.
I mean, these are the things that people don't think about.
Or they somehow say, I just have to figure it out on the other side. You know, I've got this. I say it this way with folks, is that if you want to get someone angry, get between them and the altar and get between them and the divorce court. If they are building up a head of steam and they're headed that way, and that's when I just want to say, please just stop, slow down, stop, slow down. Let's, you know, road, bridge out ahead. Let's just calm down first. And so for me, I really try to help people begin to entertain the idea that, not that, oh, we can fix this, because I think that's too overwhelming, but to say, let's just slow down. Let's assess and stop the bleeding first, and then we can figure out where the hurts are and begin to see what is possible.
So that brings up a really interesting question. And I think that for a lot of people, they wonder, are there really more options? I mean, because I know that people tend to think, well, if I stay, then it's not going to get any better. You know, I'm going to, you know, so the option is I stay in a marriage that I don't like, or I get a divorce. And are there really more options than that? I mean, I know I do this, but, I mean, couples counseling gets a really bad rap.
Sure does. It sure does. And I've read a stat that I put on my website because I wanted people to read it if they came to my website, that this is a fairly well-known study, that 1,000 therapists were contacted, and 60% of them said they were neutral.
Oh, I know.
I don't really care whether a couple comes in. I don't have a vested interest either way. Only 33% said that they were committed to preserving marriage and avoiding divorce at all costs. And this is the shocking thing, is that almost 3% of them said frequently I recommend divorce. I had a client this past week who said, is there any hope for us? She was doing an individual session. And I told her, I said, you know what? I said, let me tell you about my life in the last week. I said, I had two wonderful emails that came in on Friday from folks I haven't seen in months. And when that last left, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hope that they make it. They just seem to be in a world of trouble. And both of them were so grateful and were telling me, you know, thank you so much. Not that I fixed it all. They got over the hump, and things were going great, and they were just wanted to let me know. So I shared that with this lady. I said, you know, we don't have any predictors. That's what we would like, is the magic elixir that's going to fix it. We don't have that. And I said, you know, I would think it would be an abuse of power to tell someone what they need to be doing with their life. And so I would never want to tell somebody, you know what, you should just get a divorce. I oftentimes, you know, when it gets bad, say, maybe we ought to think about separation for a while and see what happens. And still give people the power over their own lives, because it is sad to think that we know that oftentimes we reduce the opportunity for a couple to reconcile by going to couples counseling. And so if that's somebody listening to the show today who's thinking, all right, maybe I'll give this counseling thing a try, then you need to be very careful. I want to lay that out to you. Please be so careful with who you select, because you need to see somebody that is going to at least come alongside you and say, I'm going to stand at that proverbial altar that you were at years ago saying, till death do us part. Let's see if we can carry that out, because there's some good things ahead if we can figure out how to do it differently.
Right, and I do think it's very important, and that statistic, I mean, even in my field where marriage is in the name, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm not just a licensed family therapist. Marriage is actually in our name, and we have people, I mean, and there's not much about actually supporting the marriage. And again, I have to be extraordinarily clear, I am not saying that if you're in an abusive situation, you need to stay. I'm not saying that all marriages can be saved. I get it. There are some exceptions to that. But you have to go to somebody who, it's like I tell my clients, you know what? I'm your biggest cheerleader. I'm going to be the last one to give up hope in this situation. Mm. But I can only provide guidance. I can't actually make people do anything, which I wish I could, but I can't. You know, and it is very important, because anybody, you know, who has the credentials can do couples work, but it's actually not an easy thing to do. And the other thing that I want people to understand is your partner doesn't necessarily have to be willing to come with you. That can seriously change the relationship, even if your partner doesn't want to step through somebody's door. Now, I highly recommend that if your partner is asking you to go to counseling, that you at least give it a shot. You might be surprised.
I'm with you, Leslie. I tell people sometimes, if they give me a phone call, which I'm like you, you know, hey, give me a call. We can talk. I want to see what I can do to help you at least entertain a new idea. Because you think, I've thought of everything. I'm like, I know you thought of everything you can think of. I don't doubt that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some things you haven't thought of that we could consider. So what can we try differently? And with that mindset, to begin to just say to folks, look, you can come, and you know, I want my spouse to come. All you can do is ask them. You can't make them.
Can't force them.
Oftentimes that one will come along out of curiosity, because they want to know what you're going to tell them. What are you going to tell that counselor about me? And so, you know, a lot of times I'm shameless. whatever I got to do to try to get that spouse of leaning out to come so that I can breathe a little bit of hope that I want to let you know that I'm not in favor of doing what you've been doing. Let's figure out a different way to do it. And to say, because if I can send folks out even after the first session with an idea or two, I love what John Gottman, who's a very wise Jewish gentleman out in the Pacific Northwest, he has a reason, I'm sure, for the number, but he says, would you just give your spouse a six-second hug in the morning and a six-second hug in the evening and try that? So I'm looking for ways that I can give people an opportunity to do something they haven't been doing and not be, you know, what I call flinching. You know, if I flinch and you flinch, kind of like the old Western, you know, if I flinch for my gun, you're going to flinch for yours, and then it's a headache. So what can we do to get everybody calm? Can we try a couple of things and see if it works? And if it doesn't work, guess what? You will feel a lot better about your future if you say, you know what, not only did I do everything I could think of, I even sought help and did everything that they suggested, and for whatever reason it didn't work, I sure hope it works. And I am like you, Leslie. I am the hopeless cheerleader. I'm the hopeless, never give up the hope on the cheering, that we can stay in this, try it, and go. Because I know that if we can talk about some good news, that it is a word of hope. Research indicates that a large majority of people who are in unhappy marriages, and they hung in there, and they avoided divorce, they, even a few years later, report that they're very happy in their marriages. Get this, I think this is even more important. So not only did they get over the hump, but they are happier in that same marriage than people who divorced and got into a new marriage.
Yep.
I think that's pretty profound.
Which needs to be said. You know, it needs to be, because if you can make it through, and I don't recommend white-knuckling it. I don't recommend trying to do it on your own. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't fix my own broken leg. You get the, I mean, the thing is, you and I know this. We know what can make things better. But unless somebody comes in and asks us, you know, I mean, I know you write, I write, I do this show, I'm trying to get this information out there. But if people don't access the information, there isn't anything we can do. I mean, going door to door, you know, taking surveys, I'm not sure is going to work. But, you know, and I think it was Einstein, I think, is who said you can't solve a problem with the same mindset that created it. So it is that concept you're talking about. Well, I've tried everything I know how to do. Yes, but you're stuck in your own mind, and somebody from the outside might have a different suggestion that could really break through and really create some change.
Absolutely, and that's not true just in marriage. It's certainly the payoff is much greater in marriage when we go, oh, that's a new idea for me. Now I can unlock all these ideas that I hadn't thought of myself. I've got a sign outside my office because it's that time of year to put it out there. One of my phrases, Leslie, is one counselor is way cheaper than two divorce attorneys. And I've got a sign right on a major road out there. My landlords wouldn't let me put it out during the season. And, you know, I'm hoping that that gets people's attention, because I ask people who come in from time to time who, well, I talked to a lawyer. I said, well, I'm just curious, what was the retainer going to be? The cheapest I've heard is $2,000. And I said, just think about how many sessions it would take counseling-wise to even approach that number. What if we started with a much lower investment into counseling and see what happens before we could pull the trigger on a $2,000, $3,000 check to an attorney who basically says, don't talk to your spouse, and then, you know, you've given up complete rights really to the rest of your life in a lot of ways.
It's absolutely true. And you and I could keep talking about this forever because obviously we're both so passionate about it. But can you tell people where they can read more of your articles, find out more about other ways of thinking, you know, because where can they reach you?
Great. I'm in the Atlanta area, and my website is greggriffin.net, GREGGRIFFIN.net. I've got a blog link up in the top. I don't do as much blogging as I'd like. There are a few articles, particularly within the last year, I think, that may be helpful for folks like that. And I'm here. I do phone counseling. I don't know, Leslie, if you do distance counseling as well.
I do. I do.
Because the idea is that I think for Leslie and me and so many others that are what I call a marriage-friendly or a pro-marriage therapist is, look, at least give us a shot, because there's so many, many blessings that you will rob yourself of if you bail out early. And I know that may make some people's blood pressure rise. You're telling me I'm bailing out early. You don't know what my last 7 years have been like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and I don't pretend to know. I just know that there's a better way ahead, and maybe one of those ways could work for you. And if it did, oh, my goodness, what a beautiful legacy that would be. You know, a bunch of years from now to see the grandchildren running around looking at each other, sitting on the front porch going, we're in a heck of a ride, and we did it.
Well, and I agree. And so, you know, if your marriage isn't what you want it to be, divorce is always an option. But it really should be the last option, especially if you've got kids. You know, because if you have children, you're not actually ever going to get away from your spouse. You're still going to have to figure out how to problem solve. You're still going to have to be able to communicate and effectively with them, which is one of the reasons why many people are so unhappy, is because they can't communicate effectively. Mm. And once you get divorced and somebody else comes into your kid's life, maybe there's a step-parent, maybe they're just living together, there's all kinds of things that you actually lose control over, so you'll have additional challenges. Now, again, Greg and I believe this. Not all marriages can or should be saved, but a huge number of them can. And the question is, are your children worth finding out if yours is one of them? And again, it isn't about living in pain, because I don't agree with that, miserable in marriage, not in the same sentence, but is it worth figuring out whether or not you can actually have the marriage you want? The how you get there, that's my job and Greg's job and all of the people who help. But the question is, do you want it? And if you do, then the time to take action is now. And one of the ways you can take action is to keep listening to the show. And I hope this has been helpful for you today. And until next week, stay loving.